Again, this morning, a beautiful July 3rd. I hope everyone is going to enjoy themselves a little bit this weekend. Maybe have a barbecue, spend some time with, I don't know, whoever you're quarantined with. But it's really wonderful to be able to learn together. I look forward to this every single week. This in the Tehillim class, the highlights of my week. So I want to thank you. A class is only as good as those who participate and those who join. The other reason I'm very excited this week is because my bar mitzvah parsha, Parshas Chukas. I did not have a double parsha, thank God. I was spared that. But I did lane Parshas Chukas. So obviously I have an affinity for this week's parsha. And that was the last time that I laned. Unlike my son, Mirtz Hashem, who's going to be bar mitzvah soon, I'm going to force him to lane more often, to not make the mistake that I do. Laning is like riding a bike. But once you forget it, you're gone forever. So it's I hope that I remember this parsha fondly. And please God, I'll be able to share a little bit of it with you. Okay, as is our custom here on Friday mornings, three ideas, 30 minutes. Here we go. Energize us, charge us into Shabbos. Those who are doing Daf Yomi know that this is an amazing Daf. It's all about the importance of preparing on Erev Shabbos for Shabbos itself and the benefits that one receives when we dedicate time on Friday to prepare ourselves for Shabbos. So in addition to sharing Divrei Torah, I hope my prayer is that this 30 minutes that you and I spend together on Friday mornings is an opportunity to prepare ourselves for Shabbos, to get excited for Shabbos, and the wonderful benefits that come alongside with it. So here we go. Idea number one on the parsha comes from Rav Yehuda Shaviv, from a Sefer Misinai Ba, who points out the following, that there are two shiras that appear in the Torah. One is very familiar to us, one almost none of us are going to be familiar with. The one that's very familiar to us, of course, is in Parshas Bishalach. Az Yashir Moshe Uvnei Yisrael Ashashira Azos, the Jewish people, Moshe Rabbeinu, sing to Hashem. What is the context of them singing to Hashem? Well, of course, we know. The Jewish people were in Mitzrayim for many hundreds of years of miserable slavery. They are finally let out of Mitzrayim, and on their way out, they are caught between the proverbial rock and a hard place. Picture yourself at the gazebo at the end of Palmetto Park Road, where you have the Atlantic Ocean on one side, and you have the Egyptians barreling down at you down Palmetto Park Road. And of course, you would start to panic. So the Jewish people panic. Eventually, Hashem splits the sea after Nachshon ben Aminadav. They come to the other side, and the Jewish people are ecstatic, and they start singing. You and I know that song very well, because we read about it in Parshas Bishalach. We read about it on Pesach. And of course, we read it every morning in our davening. If you will pay attention tomorrow morning, though, you'll notice that there's a second Shira in the Torah, and that is Shiras HaBe'er, the song that is sung about the well that journeyed with the Jewish people in the desert. And there the Pasuk tells us, Az Yashir Yisrael Es HaShira HaZos Ali Ve'er Enula. Again, a song about the well in the desert. And you'll notice when you think about it, there are several striking distinctions between what we call Shiras Hayam, the song of the Jewish people at the sea, at the Kriyas Yamsuf, and the song in our Parsha. Now, one noticeable difference is, I would venture to say if I polled the people who are on this Zoom, everyone will have heard of Shiras Hayam, and my guess is maybe I'd put 50% would have even known that there was a song in our Parsha, and the only way you'll remember tomorrow is because if you pay attention closely to the laning, the Baal Koreh switches the tune for those two or three psukim to mimic the tune that we use for Az Yashir. So you may pick up on that for those who are able to come to shul. But you'll notice several other significant differences between these two songs. Number one is simply our knowledge of it, right? Again, Shiras Hayam is ubiquitous. Everyone knows about it. Everyone is understanding of it. We talk about it. We read about it. We stand up for it. The shir that you and I are going to read tomorrow morning, you can blink an eye and you can miss it completely. Of course, the second distinction is, when was Shiras Hayam sung? The Jewish people crossed through the sea, and immediately, they didn't waste any time, they didn't delay whatsoever, they didn't procrastinate, they saw a miracle, and they sang out to Hashem. The Shiras HaBe'er in our Parsha is very interesting, because how long have the Jewish people had the well in the desert for? Well, if you blinked between last week's Parsha and this week's Parsha, you'll have missed the fact that 38 years passed between the end of Parshas Korach and the beginning of Parshas Chukas. So the Jewish people have been in the desert now for about 38, 39 years They've had the well with them. And only now, after having that miracle with them for 38 or 39 years, only now do they begin to sing praise and show gratitude to Hashem for this miracle. It's a very strange concept. And lastly, is the centrality even within the Parsha itself. When you come to Az Yashir, that we read about in Parshas Bishalach, you cannot miss it. It is the centerfold of the Parsha. In fact, if you open up a Sefer Torah, you will notice immediately that it's written differently in the Torah. So visually, hearing, everything is different about it. Again, in this song that we read about in our Parsha, not only do you and I not know about it, not only can you blink an eye tomorrow morning and miss it completely, but even the placement of the Parsha shows that it's almost like an afterthought. It's a peripheral part to the story. It's not a central part to the story, which of course I'm going to debunk. So those are some just very noticeable differences between the song that's sung at Kriyas Yamsuf and the song that we're going to sing about in our Parsha tomorrow morning. You'll also notice another significant difference, and that is who initiates the song. When it comes to Kriyas Yamsuf, what does the Pasuk say? Az Yashir Moshe U V'nei Yisrael. Moshe initiates the song, and after Moshe initiates the song, the Jewish people tag along for the ride. Now listen to the phraseology of the Pasuk we're going to read about tomorrow morning. Az Yashir Yisrael Es Hashira Hazos Ali Ve'er Enula. Who initiates the song in Parshas Chukas? None other than the Jewish people. Where is Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu is nowhere to be found. He's completely absent from this song altogether. And I've spoken about this in the past because I think it's such a striking question. And so obviously the answer is to that last question first, the difference is, I should say, is that whereas in Parshas Bishalach, the Jewish people were in their infancy, they were babies, they didn't know how to function as a people, so they needed Moshe Rabbeinu to initiate the gratitude on their behalf. By the time we come to Parshas Chukas, they are an older people, they are more mature, and therefore they are able to initiate it on their own. Think about what you do with a child or a grandchild. So you might go into a store and the owner of the store will give your child or grandchild a lollipop. And what do you do to your child or grandchild? So when they're very young, you say, what do you say to the owner? And the child doesn't really say, so we say, we say thank you, and the child says, thank you, and everyone says, oh, that's so cute, right? So that's what we do to a child. If you have a 30-year-old, right, is it cute anymore if my mother has to remind me, Philip, what do you say to the owner of the store? Let's say it together. So what am I? I'm a pathetic human being, right? So as we grow older, we mature in our ability to say thank you. We mature in our ability to express gratitude. So in Parshas Bishalach, the Jewish people needed Moshe. Over here, they're able to initiate it on its own. It's part of the transformation. It represents the evolution of the Jewish people. But I want to share one final idea on this first idea of the contrast between Kriyas Yamsuf, the song at Kriyas Yamsuf, and the song here. And it's very simple, and yet I believe very profound. When it comes to the Shiras Hayam, the song that's sung at the Yamsuf, the Jewish people are in the heat of the moment. They just experienced the greatest miracle known to mankind. And so it's very natural for them to explode in appreciation to Hashem for being saved from a very precarious situation. That is easy to do. Any of us, when we see or experience a miracle, it is very simple. It does not take a significant amount of mindfulness to thank Hashem if you experienced a miracle. Right? You're driving down the highway, you get in a major car accident, you come out unscathed. Hashem, thank you so much. That's easy to do. What's much harder to do is when there are miracles that are in our lives every single day that become so ever-present that we start taking it for granted. Those are the things that are much more difficult to thank Hashem for. How many of us really thought, that when we woke up in the morning, and that our eyes were working, and our heart is beating, and there's air in our lungs. How many of us really, when we woke up in the morning, looked to Hashem and said, thank you, I felt my heartbeat, thank you, Hashem. There's air that's allowing me to function, thank you, Hashem. My eyes opened up, I'm able to stand up, thank you, Hashem. right? Oh, by the way, the sun rose this morning. That's pretty cool, right? Now, I take it for granted. I happen to have davenates this morning. But, like, that's pretty amazing that there's a consistency and a regularity to that, right? Thank you, Hashem, for that. I went running this morning, and I happened to notice some beautiful flowers that were sprouting. Thank you, right? How many of us go through our day looking at every single aspect of it as if it's the most incredible miracle known to mankind? Now, the reason why we don't is because we become so used to it, right? The sun rising is no longer miraculous to us because it happens every day. I take it for granted. And you know what? Despite the fact that we could talk and we know that health we should never take for granted, the bottom line is most of us, when we go to the bathroom and come out, we take it for granted that our bodies are functioning properly. And you know what? We take for granted that my heart is beating right now, right? Next time you say modim, before you say modim in your Shmona Esrei, here's your homework. I want you to pause for a second in silence and listen to the beat of your heart. Let that be the first step of thanking Hashem. Because if our heart doesn't beat, everything else is out the window. Okay? So says Rav Shaviv, that is what makes the song in Parshas Chukas so extraordinary, is that the Jewish people for 38 years had this well with them. And you know what they did? They took it for granted. It was so ubiquitous in their lives. It was there when they went to sleep. It was there when they woke up in the morning. They simply took it for granted. And it stopped being miraculous to them. What happens in our Parsha? Miriam dies. And the second Miriam dies, Chazal tell us, the Be'er, the well, disappeared. And all of a sudden, the Jewish people said, wait a second, where's the well? Right? It's the equivalent of me and you waking up this morning and saying, right, what happened to the sun? Hashem forgot to turn on the lights this morning. Right? Then we would notice that there's a sun that rises every morning. So the Jewish people wake up one morning, Miriam dies, and they say, where was that well? And Hashem says, ha 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 ha, maybe now you won't take it for granted. And so says Rav Yehuda Shaviv, and again, I'm extrapolating a little bit, but that's what makes the song in our Parsha, in Parsha's Chukas, so amazing. What happened in Parsha's B'Shalach, that's easy. Anyone can sing to Hashem when there's a great miracle. But learning to sing and thank Hashem for the miracles that exist in our lives every single day, that is extraordinary. To thank Hashem for our eyes working, and our legs working, and our heart working, and the sun rising, and the flowers sprouting. All of that is the song that you and I are going to sing tomorrow morning. The Shiras HaBe'er, the song of the well, is the Jewish people only appreciated something after they lost it. You and I should never wait for that. Let's not only start appreciating our health once it's no longer there. Let's not only start appreciating our loved ones once they're already gone. Let's not wait for those moments. Let's appreciate every single blessing, every single miracle, every single moment of the day to thank Hashem and express that gratitude. That's idea number one. Idea number two that I want to share with you, as again I've shared in the past, but I think it's such a magnificent idea that I want to develop it a little bit. It really correlates to the first idea that we just said. Obviously, in the epicenter of the Parsha, Parshas Chukas, is the story of the Nachash Nechoshet. Now, if you think that is a messy two words to say, try saying it as a bar mitzvah boy. They are, as your voice is cracking and your braces are getting stuck on your gums, and it's a tongue twister, right? So Nachash Nechoshet, and the very strange story of the snake, and they put the snake up on a pedestal, and they have to look at the snake, and anyone who does that is healed, and anyone who doesn't die. It's very strange. So the pasuk there tells us, "Vayishlach Adonai ba'am et hanechashim hasrafim, vaynashchu et ha'am vayamat am ra." I'm sorry, am rav b'Yisrael. So the pasuk tells us, "Vayishlach ye" with two dots underneath, and the question is, why is it yishlach and not yishlach with one dot underneath? Right, that's our question. Question number two. Why is it Yishlach and not Yishlach? And the answer is, suggests Rav Drukman in a beautiful sefer that I've quoted from often, is that when we talk about the word Vayishlach with the one dot, that represents a sense of Shlichut. I'm sending someone as a messenger. So for example, if you were to look in the story of Parshas, in Bereishis, where Yaakov sends messengers to Esav, you will find that formulation. If you look at where Yaakov sends Yosef, you will find that formulation as well. It is a form of shlichut. I am sending something forward. But let's take Parshas Bishalach, which sounds an awful lot like Vayishalach, right? Bishalach, Paro is not sending his soldiers. Vayhi Bishalach Paro, right? I'm sorry, Paro is not sending the Jewish people. What was he allowing? Vayhi Bishalach Paro Esa'am. Paro was releasing the Jewish people. The Jewish people wanted to leave, and Paro gave them permission to leave. So the Jewish people leave on their own. Paro's not sending them. Paro is allowing them to go. If you look in the Yonah, in Parshas Noach, you'll see a very similar description of Vayishalach. Because Yonah didn't send the bird. You don't throw a bird. What do? You release a bird. You're holding a bird. The bird can't wait to get out. You let go of the bird, and what does it do? It flies on its own. You're releasing it. So, whereas Vayishlach is a form of shlichut, I'm sending you actively as a messenger. Vayishalach, I'm not sending you, I'm releasing you. What happens in our parsha? Vayishalach Adonai ba'am et hanechashim hasrafim. Vayishalach means, essentially, that Hashem doesn't send the snakes on the Jewish people. That would be very mean of Hashem. It means that Hashem released the snakes upon the Jewish people. He freed the snakes upon the Jewish people. It means that if you think about it, the entire time the Jewish people are in the desert, the snakes are there the entire time. Right? They're ready to bite the Jewish people every moment of every day. What's preventing them? Only one thing, Hashem. Hashem, the entire 38 years of the time in the desert, is holding the snakes back. Right? Picture like a ravenous dog. I had that this morning. You guys already know me and dogs don't get along very well. So I'm on a run, and there was this like, I don't think it was a dog. I think it was a wolf, maybe a bull, right? But this guy had on leash. It was this like little guy with this dog that was probably like 15 times his size, right? So I, of course, like run to the other side of the road. He probably thinks it's because coronavirus. No, it's because I'm a little scaredy cat. So I'm running far away. But what happens as the dog sniffs fear? They know it. Right? So the second I come near the dog like lurches. And there's that moment where you're wondering, like, is this little guy going to be able to hold back that big dog? Or am I about to be mincemeat? Right? So the moment that happens, what's happening? The owner is holding back the dog. He's not sending the dog at me. He's holding the dog back. If the owner were to let go of the leash, what would happen? You would not be looking at Philip Moskowitz right now, right? I would be getting plastic surgery done on my face right now. That, says Rav Drukman, is exactly what happened to the Jewish people in the desert. There were dangers lurking in every corner. Think about the desert life, scorpions and snakes and wild animals. And they were all waiting to pounce on the Jewish people. And Hashem was protecting the Jewish people. All of a sudden, we come to this parsha, which is really characterized by a lack of gratitude by the Jewish people towards Hashem. And Hashem says, you know what? What if I take away... What if I stop preventing the snakes from attacking the Jewish people? What's going to happen? And so Hashem doesn't send the snakes. He doesn't vayishlach. He vayishalach. He releases them. He frees them, enabling them to go and attack the Jewish people until Hashem ultimately stops it. And the message, therefore, of the Nechash Nechoshet is that Hashem is protecting us all the time. There are things, there are times in our lives where miracles happen to us that we're not even aware of. We don't even realize Hashem is protecting us while he's protecting us, right? There are snakes lurking, proverbial, paradigmatic snakes lurking in our lives all the time. I get in a car, I drive to Publix, right? How do I know that Hashem didn't just prevent a major accident from happening? That Hashem didn't stop a car three stop signs before to prevent him from me at that dangerous intersection from getting, I have no idea. There are times in my life constantly where Hashem is protecting me and you when we're not even aware of it. And the greatest proof I can give to you is the second of the Parshios that we're going to read tomorrow morning, Parshas Balak. Parshas Balak is all about Bilam and Balak wanting to curse the Jewish people. And I point this out every year because I think it's so amazing. If you think about the Parsha, What's amazing is it's not through the view of the Jewish people. It's through the view of Balak and Bilam. Do the Jewish people have any clue that they are on the cusp of destruction? That there's a wicked king and a sorcerer that want to destroy them? And it's only because Hashem changes the curse into a blessing that the Jewish people were saved. The Jewish people, if you think about it in like a split screen, there's our parsha, Balak and Bilam, and then there's the Jewish camp. And Balak and Bilam are perched over. They're trying to destroy the Jewish people. And what are the Jewish people doing the whole time? They're doing the laundry. They're going to work, right? They're having meetings. I don't know what do people do, right? They're completely oblivious that they were on the cusp of destruction and that Hashem protected them from it. So there are moments in our lives where we're intimately aware of Hashem's providence. And then there are moments in our lives where we don't even realize Hashem is protecting us without us even knowing about it. And I pointed out from Rabbi Frand that this is what you and I say every day, three times a day in our Shemoneh Esrei. We say Melech Ozer Umoshia Umagein, which seems very repetitive in terminology. Melech, okay, I understand, God is the king. Ozer, he helps me. Moshia, he saves me. Umagein, he protects me. They sound very similar. Says Rabbi Frand, no, you're missing. Magain, right? Moshiach means that Hashem saves us from dangers that you and I know about, right? I know that when I got in a car accident, I wasn't hurt, Hashem saved me. That I know. But Magain, says Rabbi Frand, means that Hashem is protecting us even when you and I don't even realize it. That I got in the car, I drove to Publix this morning successfully, Hashem could have prevented a major accident. I have no idea, right? I could have been walking and the dog didn't, there are things I don't know about. So we don't just thank Hashem for the things that we know about. We thank Hashem for everything, even for those moments in our lives where we weren't aware of his protection, but with the confidence and amuna that he is protecting us the entire time. So idea number one was the beautiful idea of Rav Shaviv, the contrast between the Shiras Hayam in Parshas Bishalach and the Shiras HaBe'er, the song of the well, that exists in our Parsha, a beautiful lesson about not just thanking Hashem for the open miracles, but the miracles that you and I take so much for granted. Idea number two was this beautiful idea from Rav Drukman, the difference between Vayishlach, where I send someone actively, and Vayishalach, where I simply release something. And the message is that Hashem was protecting the Jewish people in the desert the entire time until he didn't. And it was once he didn't, why did the Jewish people have to look at the snake to appreciate the miracle that Hashem was doing for them the entire time, to appreciate just how great Hashem was to them in the desert? And again, the Jewish people were oblivious to all of those brachas. That was idea number two. Idea number three, it is a double parsha, so I have to say a Dvar Torah from Balak, and it is one of my favorite, absolute favorite Dvar Torah. We say, in common parlance, that you're never supposed to judge a book by its cover. And yet we know, if we're intellectually honest, that we do it all the time. Right? Anyone here who's ever owned a business, had a business, ever participated in any form of an interview knows that by and large, within like 5 seconds of a person walking into an interview, you have sized them up. And I would say with like 80% certainty, you could tell whether you're going to hire that person or not. Right? Within a few minutes. Again, I know from when I've done interviews here at the show. Within a few minutes, you have like a really good sense of whether the dynamic is there, whether they have that X factor of what you're looking for in a work. So we say don't judge a book by its cover, but we do it all the time. Now listen to this pasuk from tomorrow's parsha, the second of them. It's going to, again, these are psukim that I'll bet you never noticed. And I'm going to point it out to you and you're going to say, wow, that's a very strange pasuk. Listen to the pasuk. Balak has paid Bilam to come curse the Jewish people. Bilam gets up there, he tries, and he's unsuccessful. So Balak comes back a second time. And what does he say? Vayomer elav Balak. Balak says to Bilam, Lech na iti ela makom acher. Come to a different place. In other words, cursing the Jewish people here didn't work. So let's go over there and let's try to curse them again. Ashir tirenu misham efes katsehu tire v'chulo lo tire. And you know what your vision is going to be like over there? You're not going to be able to see the entire Jewish people. You're only going to be able to see a little sliver of the Jewish people, and from there you're going to be able to curse them. Now, does that make any sense to you whatsoever? Right? Again, you have to picture. Bilam and Balak are on a mountaintop. The Jewish people are in a in a valley. They are overlooking the Jewish people. They have 360-degree vision. And they're looking at the Jewish people, but Bilaam tries to curse the Jewish people. He's unsuccessful. Balak says, you know what, let's go over there. You're going to try again, but instead of being able to see the entire Jewish people, you're only going to be able to see a small fragment. You're not going to be able to see the entire camp, and from there you'll be able to curse them. Does that make any sense to you? Why does Balak think that by switching places and by seeing less of the Jewish people, it will enable him to curse them? Right? We usually think that the more peripheral vision you have, the better off you are. You can understand the situation that much better. Balak does something very strange. Right? Again, picture like, I give a drush on the bima, and everyone's falling asleep. So I say, you know what? Let me go into the corner of the back of the shul, where only like 5 people can see me, and let me try to give the drusha from there. You would say, Rabbi, that's the dumbest thing on the planet. Like, no, you stand where you could see everyone. That's the greatest perspective you could have. So why does Balak think that by limiting the perspective of Bilaam, he's actually going to be more successful in cursing? So I want to share with you a beautiful idea by Rav Yehuda Gershuni in his Sefer Shaarei Tzedek. And he says that you have to put yourself in the mindset of Bilaam and Balak. Bilaam and Balak know that the key to their success, again, who are they going up against? They're going up against God, right? That's a pretty good adversary. So they realize they have to curse the Jewish people, and the only way to do that is by noticing and pointing out their shortcomings and their failures. The question is, how do you do that? Because on the whole, the Jewish people are pretty good people, right? They're faithful, they're a loyal flock, how are Bilaam and Balak going to succeed in convincing God to destroy his own people? And so they come up with a suggestion. They say, maybe instead of looking at the entirety of the Jewish people, we're only going to look at Katzei Ha'am. Only zoom in on a very small, narrow fragment, fringe population of the Jewish people. And if we can focus on a very small, fringe population of the Jewish people, maybe it will be much easier to find their faults and to find their shortcomings. And so Bilaam and Balak know that from a bird's eye view, looking at the Jewish people as a whole, there's no chance to convince Hashem to destroy them. Because as a whole, we're pretty good people. But if they can convince Hashem, and if they could only look on a small fragment of the Jewish people, a small fringe group of the nation, then maybe they'll be able to find fault and therefore be able to cause divine anger. That is how Rav Gershuni explains the mindset of Bilaam and Balak, why they changed from the perspective of the entire people to just a small fragment of the Jewish people. But I want to suggest that what's true of their assessment of the entire nation is equally true of us assessing each other as well, right? If I am to look at you and I see you as an entire person, most of us are good people. Most of us are good people. But if I take a magnifying glass and look at every single specific detail of your life and the way you conduct your life, I will very quickly identify your warts, your faults, in your quirks. So by zooming the lens out, you're a pretty good person. By zooming the lens in, we have no problem finding grounds for criticism. See, none of us are perfect. I know that's very hard for some people to grasp and to reconcile with in their brains, but none of us are perfect, I promise. We each have our faults and shortcomings. I know I have mine. But when I wake up in the morning, I don't say, you know, Moskowitz, you have this fault. You're a terrible person. You're a nobody. No, what do I say to myself? I say to myself, I might not be perfect, but you know what? All in all, I'm a pretty good person. If you look at Moskowitz as a whole, I might not, maybe my mother-in-law disagrees, but I think I'm a pretty good person, right? I give myself the benefit of the doubt because I don't just notice my faults, but I look at myself as a whole. We have to learn to judge each other the same way. We have to take Bilaam's insight that he tried to curse the Jewish people with, and actually use it to our advantage, and to recognize that if I focus on one part of you, I will find fault. I will find your warts and I will find every imperfection. But if I allow myself to zoom out and to get to know the person as a whole, then I will get to know you as a pretty good person. In the same way as I cut myself the slack when I view myself as a whole, I'm going to learn to cut you the same slack as well. Obviously, this is a beautiful idea for Parshas Balak, but it's also very appropriate during this coming week, obviously next Thursday, is going to be Shavasar B'Tammuz, the day that's going to mark the commencement of the three-week period taking us up to Tisha B'Av when we commemorate the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And obviously, it's our annual opportunity to focus on our interpersonal relationships and the working on our sin of being overly judgmental and hypocritical of each other. And here's my advice. The next time you want to be critical of someone, you notice something that's hypocritical about a person or a person does wrong, before you rush to judge the person and before you rush to write them off, what if you take a step back? What if Bilaam and Balak were right? What if our biggest curse and weakness comes from when we zoom in on each other, on the Kitzei Ha'am, and we find the faults and the shortcomings? But wouldn't we all be just a little bit better off if we allowed ourselves to zoom the lens out and to get to know the entire person? And so instead of rushing to judge a person based on what kippah they wear or what hat they wear or how they dress or where they send their child to school, what if you took that step back and focused on the person as a whole? Ve'avedan es kol ha'adam l'kaf zchut. If you focus on the entire person, then maybe we won't be as hypercritical. Maybe we won't be as overly judgmental. So I went 2 minutes over, but I also started 2 minutes late. So let's summarize the three beautiful ideas that we shared this morning. Idea number one was from Rav Yehuda Shaviv, the contrast between the song at Kriyas Yamsuf and the song that's in our Parsha, the recognition that we have to thank Hashem not just for the big miracles in our lives, but even the everyday mundane miracles that you and I take so much for granted. Idea number two was a beautiful idea from Rav Drukman, Vayishlach versus Vayishalach, that there are times in our lives where God protects us, God is performing miracles on our behalf, and you and I don't even realize it. And so when we say those words in the morning, Melech, Ozer, Umoshia, Umagain, Hashem, thank you for protecting me, I'm thanking Hashem not just for protecting me from the things that I know about, but even the myriad of things that Hashem does on my behalf that I have no awareness of whatsoever. And idea number three comes from the words of Bilaam and Balak, that they tried to curse the Jewish people by only zooming in on the faults and the weaknesses, the katzei ha'am. But maybe you and I should learn a lesson from that, that we shouldn't zoom in on the imperfections of each other. We should zoom out and get to know the person as a whole. We should train ourselves to be less hypercritical, less overly judgmental. And if that's the case, please God, we won't be fasting this Thursday, but we'll be celebrating and dancing together in Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh. I want to wish everyone a beautiful Shabbos, a meaningful Shabbos, an inspirational Shabbos. And as always, I tell you to not only stay safe, but to stay besimcha. And I'm going to end our chats, and I'm going to unmute everyone so we can wish each other